The purpose of our trials. The purpose of our trials. Again, James 1:2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into the various trials." And then the next word of verse 3 is knowing. And see, it's all a mental perception that we must have in order to view trials as joyful. And again, there is that difference between joy and happiness. Knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Let patience have its perfect work that you may be. And that word "that," I did look it up, but the word "that" in verse 4 is one of those resulting condition clauses. We could easily translate it "in order that," or "so that," or "with the resulting condition that you could be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Knowing. Again, yesterday, or last week, boy, time goes by fast, seemed like just yesterday, we were saying that one word that we need to keep in the forefront of our mind as we're working through James 1 is faith. Because again, as Peter says, that the trial of your faith being more precious than of gold that perishes, though it be tried with fire. And the question I have to ask myself when I'm going through some difficulties is, Dan, why are you so upset? What is it that's more important than the trial of your faith, than the refining of your faith? But God, I want convenience. I want sleep. I want health. I want whatever it is. Well, which is it? Which is more important to me than my faith? Because if I see that there's nothing that there's more important to me than my faith, then if God throws in the refining fire so we can draw off the dross, that's good news. But if I want peace and contentment and the easy life of whatever that is, then I'm going to be upset. So we must know that the testing of our faith produces. All right, so here's my my request to you. See if you can't come up with a scenario, some real instance that happened in your life this past week. And as we work through these, you can reference it. For those of you who haven't, let's talk about Carol and Chris. Okay, Carol and Chris are brothers and sisters in Christ, and they've been involved in a ministry with you. Your children are playing with their children. You guys are really pretty close. And you get a phone call, just a random out-of-the-blue phone call from Carol, and she is just sobbing hysterically as she begins to try to tell you what has happened in her life in just the last couple days. She begins by saying that her husband, Chris, and you know that they haven't been getting along very well, just because when you go out to eat with them, they're always snipping at each other. You know, have you ever heard that? You sit down, someone's trying to tell a story, and the purpose of the story is just kind of the broad story, not all the details in the story. So, you know, Carol would say, "Yeah, I got up this morning at 8 o'clock. And he'd say, "No, you didn't. It was 8:15. And, you know, just the snipping back and forth and going back and forth. And you just knew that their relationship was just not very good. But she calls up, and she calls that Chris now has taken out a home equity loan without her knowledge, taken all the equity out of the house, has taken all of their money and has vanished. He just took off. He finally wrote the note, "I've had it. I need to go find myself." And he just takes off and leaves. The bad thing is, in many different ways, for some tangible ways, Chris makes 60% of their income. So there's no way she's going to be able to maintain the current bills, no less this huge home equity loan which he has taken out. Additionally, the car was in the shop, $700 worth of repairs, and they were going to go by the shop and pick up the car the day you get this phone call, and she has zero money. I mean, debit card, savings account, home equity loan. He stripped her of everything and just vanished. So now, how's she going to pay to get the car back? And she needs, of course, the car to work and transport the kids and all of that. So here she is. She's without a husband. She's without a car. She's without any savings. And she calls you. And the normal response would be, in disbelief, she begins asking many questions, such as, what am I going to do now? And that's a valid question. What am I going to tell the kids? That's again another valid question. How am I going to get the car? I don't make enough to keep up with the bills. So how is this all going to play out? Okay. Now, we'll have to stop it right there, and I'm not even going to begin to go in how we would address that and how the church would come in. So we'll just set all that aside because, again, as a brother and sister of Christ, you know, if someone falls into some difficult times, we would help them. But one of the things that I think would really help Carol in this, and I hope I'm not coming across cold, we would minister in very loving ways, but I only got 22 minutes left, so we can't develop all that. So we'll just kind of stick with the notes here. But I would like to think that one of the things that Carol would be able to realize is, number one, there is a sovereign God. And for whatever reason, God did not allow Chris to get hit by a car or get into a car accident when he was going to the bank to take the money out, because anything could have happened. In fact, we heard of just I guess it was today. Yeah, it was today that one of your friends got T-boned down in Philadelphia and is now in glory. So it happens. So, but God allowed Chris to go do all this nefarious manipulation and grab all this money and go. Any number of things could have happened to him. So Carol needs to realize that God is in this. And he's in it, as we see here in James chapter 1, for the purifying of her faith. So let's see if we can't work through some of this here and see the purpose of the trials. I think number one, when Carol hangs up the phone, there's going to be maybe a few more questions that she may be asking herself. First of all, as we see there, they're going to expose your faith. And they're going to develop your faith. Is there a sovereign God? Does God love me? Can God provide for me? Will God supply all my needs? Will Romans 8:28-29 come true? Will Genesis 50:20, where Joseph looks at his brothers and say, "You wicked bums." That's kind of the Scogan's translation. But he said, "You meant it for evil, but God is using it for good." Not only good for me, because I'm second only to Pharaoh, not only good for you, because you guys are alive and eating all this food I've stockpiled for 7 years, but the whole nation, the whole Jewish nation, is going to basically survive and thrive because of what you have done. But at this crisis, and maybe the crisis that you may have had this week, it's going to expose what you depend on other than God. What is it that you've been building your life upon other than God? What are some of the things that you put your faith in? And there's all kinds of things. First of all, it could be just our own personal plans. Well, I didn't think it was going to play out that way. That's not the way I thought it was going to happen. But again, that can be really detrimental when, of course, it doesn't play out. Here's another one, the government. Well, I was just hoping that the government would. Or I was just hoping that my union would. I was really kind of hoping that that retirement account would be there. And now they've liquidated all of it. So the purpose of our trials can be to expose our faith. What are we depending upon other than God? And then it can allow us to repent of that and put our trust in God alone. So this is what Carol's going to be going through now. What was I depending upon? Well, I was depending upon our income. I was depending upon both incomes. And not that that is necessarily in and of itself wrong. But then it goes on, capital B, is she's also going to be wondering, now, who did she depend upon more than God? And those of us who have been around for very long know that people are fickle. People come and go. There is only one who sticks closer than a brother. As we sang the song, there is only one who has never left us. But it'll also expose who we depend upon other than God. And sometimes it's self. This would be a guy who is young and strong of my body and mind and is able just to do it on himself. And he's able to do all kinds of great things, and then all of a sudden he gets this disease or this diagnosis or whatever it is, and all of a sudden the strength is stripped away from him. Or maybe there's some mental diminished capabilities. And now all of a sudden there's all this agitation and fighting and fear and questioning because the strength and then on himself that he's dependent upon now is no longer there. And we all do it, or we will all come to that point. You know, we were talking again earlier this week with people. You know, we all have to go through that point of being stripped of our independence. As we all get a little older, and sometimes as some of us have had to, we've had to put older loved ones in assisted care. And what a great hard transition that was as we took them away from their home and all their stuff, and we just give them a couple rooms of furniture. And then sometimes as they progress, we have to take them from that into an assisted living nursing care facility where they get their TV and their dresser. And usually they're not too willing to go, right? Because we keep taking parts of what was very important in their whole life away from them. Or sometimes we have to go up to somebody and say, give me your keys. It's just too scary watching you drive. Or worse yet, when I was in the car this last time, you scared the dickens out of me. Give me the keys. And we will all, unless the rapture happens or we die at a younger age, we're all going to have to go through that. And we don't want to go through that because we depend on ourselves. I want to go anywhere I want, whenever I want, and you can't take my keys. I want to live by myself. I don't want to share my room or, you know, it's my house. You know what I'm saying here? So it just exposes what we depend upon, and then sometimes it's others because we've all been disappointed by people. And we put all our faith and trust and hope in people, and then when people disappoint us, the world just goes to pot. The purpose of our trials is it exposes who we depend on more than God. And then it also exposes again what we truly do believe about God. This is the real life and bolts type belief. So in the struggles that you face this week or this composite sketch of Carol and Chris, now she's going to really believe, number one, is God a good God? You know, it's easy for me to say that God's a good God because God hasn't ripped out away all my savings is left to go to, I don't know where you want to go, someplace warm, the Caribbean or something. Okay, that's easy for me to God is for me to say, oh, God is good and God is loving and God is all wise and God is knowing because, you know, we're doing okay right now, relationship-wise. We'll see this afternoon. But if things don't go very well this afternoon, then is it, oh, God, you still love me and you're still wise and loving and kind? Or do we usually shake our fist at God and say, God, what are you doing, man? I thought you were good. If you are such a good God, then why are you allowing such evil? And God, I thought you loved me. And you see what I'm saying? So it's going to really expose what does she really believe about God. And that way there she can repent. Or sometimes, again, it boils down to those two lies we got in the Garden of Eden. You know, either A, God is not good, or B, God is withholding good. And we suck into that, and we just become most miserable. So, as we move a little further, trials also expose and develop our character. Our character. Delays. How many of you like to sit in traffic? You could do some texting maybe if you're sitting, literally sitting in traffic or something. I don't know. But how many of you like to stand in grocery lines? I mean, grocery shopping. Oh, Chuck does. How about that? We need to talk about this, Chuck. We might need some counseling there. I don't know about that. But, you know, just the delays in life. You know, what is, when we get delayed, what is usually the initial response in our mind when we're delayed? Now, here's the question. Why is that the initial immediate response? When we say you're going to meet somebody, and I don't know, you're going to meet someone here after church here for lunch, and you say, yeah, we'll be at the restaurant at 12:30. You'd probably make that. I'm not going to keep you too long. So you're there, and you're there at 12:30, and you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and your stomach's growling. The water's good. The bread is long gone. And you're still waiting and waiting. What's going on in your mind? Oh, I wonder if they're okay. I wonder what happened to them. No, it's like, man, I wish they were here. I want to eat. What's keeping them? Let's hurry up. Let's, you know what? Let's just order without them. But you know, when we're delayed, why is it our minds go to that immediate thought? It's kind of sad that usually the immediate reaction is characterized by spiritual immaturity, sometimes by carnality. And why is that when we're delayed? Another one is how we handle denial. In this particular case with Carol and Chris, it's betrayal. And how do we handle that? Well, I don't know about you. If I've been denied something, Robin made some delicious chocolate stuff for you ladies Tuesday. And she made popcorn with chocolate and stuff and nuts and everything. And then she made, I don't know, kind of this death by chocolate thing. And I was really hoping that you ladies would not eat it all. I'll tell you what, If you had eaten it all, it'd be a little bit of a different sermon. It would be on gluttony or something. But fortunately, you saved it for me. So I was able to eat it today or this week. Now, the beautiful thing about that is that Robin didn't eat it. But I'll tell you what, had you come over, I probably would not have shared it with you. Now, the bad news is I'm suffering weight-wise. That scale is so funky. It is so fickle. I tell you, you can never get a true reading on your scales, can you? I mean, they're always off. So I'm paying for that now. But deny me my chocolate, you're going to be in trouble. Deny me my coffee, you're going to be in trouble. Or let's get it off the silliness and get into some of the more seriousness when people have betrayed or denying you at work, constantly being missed promotion by promotion, constantly being regulated or delegated to the yucky jobs at work just because you're a believer. And they're denying you to exercise all of your gifting and talents at work, and you're being paid literally to push the broom. And you know that you could do much more for the company than that, but they're just denying you that advancement. So what is that immediate reaction when we're denied, betrayed, withheld from what we want to do? Oh, here's another one. Here, let's get real serious here. You guys are going out to eat, okay? You've already kind of talked this through after the service. And somewhere in the course of the service, someone who you want to go out with is changing their mind. And they're saying, we want to go to, I guess we got real close, IHOP and Chick-fil-A. Well, you all had guaranteed, you kind of thought you're going to IHOP. And now all of a sudden, Chick-fil-A, so when you walk out in the parking lot, they look at you and say, hey, let's go to Chick-fil-A. And you go, I thought we were going to IHOP. No, we're going to Chick-fil-A. And that immediate thought that comes to the forefront of your mind is, it's Philippians 2, esteeming others better than yourself. Don't look out for your interest, but also look out for the interest of others. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind. But realistically, is that our first mental thought? Usually it's not. So again, the purpose of these trials is to expose how we handle denial. It also exposes how we handle disruptions. You know, all of us to some degree have some sort of a daily schedule. I mean, whether it's on our PDAs or on our phones or on our Excel programs or whatever, we have some sort of calendars, and we like it just when the day when we wake up, we've got it in our mind how we think the day should go. And sometimes when it goes the way we think it should go, when someone asks us, how was your day or your week, we say, man, we had a good day today because everything went the way I kind of thought and planned it out. But it doesn't always work that way, does it? I mean, the dog gets sick or the car breaks down or whatever. So how do we handle the disruptions? And then when the day is not going to go at all the way you thought it was, what's those initial thoughts, actions, attitudes? And why are they that way? And you see what God is doing here? God's going to continue to disrupt your day so that you can say the immediate response or reaction is demonstrating some spiritual immaturity on my part, and I got to change that. There's some carnality in that, and I have to put off that. And I got to realize that it's only God who is God, and I am not. So he's the master, and I'm the slave, as we talked about there a week or so ago. James, a slave, a bond slave. He's the potter, I'm the clay. So God, if you want to mix up my schedule, all right, I'll let you do it. And then lastly, they expose how you and I handle devastations. And these are one of the game changers. And some of you, and we've got probably at least two, maybe three people here who recently experienced the game changers. I mean, life is not going to be the same. It's not ever going to be the same again. So when God throws these game changers at us, and life is never going to be the same again, the question is then, what's your immediate response to that? You've got the diagnosis. You got the phone call. You got the results, or whatever it is. You got the layoff slip. Friday was your last day, and now you're done. Now we're thinking about, oh man, insurance and COBRA. Wow! You mean I got to be paying that much a month? How are we going to do this? And we just go on and on and on. When life is not going to be the same again, what is our immediate response? Is it a response of spiritual immaturity, possibly carnality? And one of the purposes of our trials is for God to say, listen, this is an area you need to grow and change in, so that we can get to the point where our immediate response would be something like maybe a guy in the Old Testament. Remember what that one guy in the Old Testament said when everything was stripped away from him? A guy by the name of Job. Remember what he said? The Lord gives and the Lord, blessed be the name of the Lord. And he went into that whole idea, the idea that what did he bring into the world? Nothing. He used the physical analogy. I came into this world naked, and how am I going out of this world? Naked. I'm bringing nothing to the table here. Everything that's on the table, God has given to me. And if God has given it, then God can take it away. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Or, as we saw in the earlier hour, we could be like his wife there in chapter 2 of Job. And after the second round of game changers came, remember what Job's wife said? Yeah, like, why are you holding on to your integrity? Why are you still hanging on to this God? I mean, he's not giving you what you want anyway, certainly not what I want. So curse God. Just play into the hand of Satan. So how do we handle devastations? What is my immediate reaction? What should be my immediate reactions? And then how do I view myself and my expectations? How might then they affect that immediate response? What am I wanting out of life more important than the purifying of my faith? And now let me just show you just a couple ideas here in verse 4. Verse 4, the purpose of trials is that you may be perfect. You may be entire. You may be literally in nothing wanting. In nothing wanting. Let's just think about that phrase for a minute. How would you like to go through your entire life, the rest of your life as a believer, in nothing wanting? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that really be nice? Just go through the rest of your life not wishing time away, not wishing you had various things, not wishing you had, but just go through your whole rest of your spiritual life in nothing wanting. Kind of sounds a little bit like Paul, right? What did Paul say about that? As we saw in Philippians here this last year. Paul says, boy, I know how to live high on the hog, right? I know how to be rich. I know how, man, I had it all. And then Paul, sitting in prisons on a couple different occasions at least, he says, I know how to be abased. I know how to have stripped it all away. And he says, whether I'm rich or whether I'm flat broke in jail, I've learned how to be just content. Content, content. What's more precious to us than our faith? And I'll tell you, if we would allow these trials to work in our lives, we then can get to the point, remember that word that is one of those resulting condition clauses, in order that, or so that, you can be just complete, telos, a full-orbed man, that you could be entire, wanting nothing, wanting nothing. So let's go back to Carol for here just the closing moments. Carol really found out what she was depending upon other than God when her husband took the money and left her with the bills and the children. Carol really found out who she was depending upon other than God when and who she could not depend on. Carol also found out what she really did believe about God and how that belief system was either going to be this proverbial ball and chain that she's going to have to drag through this crisis, or whether that was really going to help and aid her through this crisis. Carol found out about her character. Just who was she really when her husband abandoned her? Now, Carol really found out the depth of her belief when her life was radically changed now forever. It's all gone. He took it all. huge debt on the house. I mean, talk about now being underwater. There's no way I can pay this, and I couldn't even pay it beforehand. Life is never going to be the same. And as a result of that, she found out who she really is. So now what about you and I? When you and I went through the various trials this past week, did we acknowledge, in fact, our true beliefs in God? And were they then beneficial to us? Whether it's the minor disruptions in life or delays, or whether it's the catastrophic game changers. The trials that came our way, were they helpful? Did we use them and view them as being helpful? Did we acknowledge the cracks possibly in our character and think through some ways in which we could change them? As we went through the various trials this past week, did we allow them to deepen and enrich our life? See, here's again kind of the neat thing about it. We can be in nothing wanting. We can have it all. The trouble is we got to get there. And we get there for verses 3 and the first part of verse 4. It's going to take the trials to produce the patience, which will ultimately end up in nothing wanting. So the trials of our life, we can go through there resisting them. We can be recoiling. We can be rebelling. We can be shaking our fist at God, saying, God, I don't know what you were doing. If you knew what you were doing, you'd do it the way I wanted it to be done. That just makes it a little harder. Or we could cooperate with God and allow God to be molding us, to shaping us, to be revealing and exposing in our life what we believe, our character, what we've been depending upon. And then as an result of that, we can be complete. We can be mature in nothing wanting.